time for Coffee with the Chicken Ladies, a podcast for people who love chickens.
Hey, everybody, and welcome. It's Chrissy and Holly from Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. We're here, and this is episode number 176 of our podcast, where we talk about everything chicken, family, fun, and
more chickens.
More chickens. We drink a ton of coffee. I'm talking a ton. But most importantly,
we hug chickens every day.
And we kiss them too. Don't forget. We brew coffee from a little coffee house in historic Gettysburg, PA. Bantam Coffee Roasters. Holly Ann, what kind of coffee are we brewing today?
Classic Colombian.
It's Colombian. And where can everyone get their cup of Colombian coffee?
BantamRoasters.com.
And follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to use that code FluffyButt for 10% off anything on the website. It's a great code. Go use it. Are you ready to sip some of this delicious Colombian coffee and chat?
I am. But first, a word from our sponsor.
We have some exciting news to share from our sponsor, Grubly Farms. They're here, new and improved, Grubly's World Harvest.
I'm a longtime subscriber, and my flock love the healthy, nutritious treats. Plus, orders $40 and more ship free.
If you haven't heard, Grubly's has a fantastic layer pellet and crumble feed. It's packed with plant and insect protein, perfect for those picky chickens and ducks.
Grubly Farms makes food and treats for healthy pets and planet.
To support us and Grubly's, go to our website or our show notes and use the link. Try it today.
Okay, so are you a duck?
I wish I were a duck, because then I would have been prepared for the sheer amount of rain that we've gotten the past couple of days.
The last 3 days, it has rained all day, every day. And we're to the point now that my chickens are cooped up today because the runs are so incredibly muddy that I'm afraid to let them out. There's no place for them to even sit, lay down. There could be an injury. So, yeah.
It's a lot of water all at one time.
It's a lot of water.
And inches and inches. So much water.
It takes your wood chips that you have and washes them away. Yeah. And then you're left with inches of mud and disgust. And that's where I am right now. Mud and disgust. I am ready for tomorrow to be a little bit sunnier. No rain. I don't even care. Just no rain. That's all.
I was doing some gardening the other day when we had some really nice weather, and I had about 10 baby lettuces that I had started, and I took them out and I planted them in the front garden where I grow the herbs, and they looked adorable, and I was so excited. They're practically floating now.
Oh, yeah. Everything is so saturated. If you listen to the news this morning, they're having all these flood alerts because there's nowhere else for the rain to go anymore.
Yeah.
The ground is so saturated. It's just puddles upon puddles. Everything's flooded. It's not fun. But no. It is what it is, right?
Unhappy wet chickens will become happy dry chickens in a day or two.
Right. And last night, we did have a fun night. We went out to the Mills, our local farm supply store, Chicks Night Out event. And we were there with Twain from Neutrina Feeds. What a fun night. What a great time.
It was really nice audience, and they had a lot of good questions. It was a lot of fun. Plus, Twain is just funny.
He is funny, and everyone was getting the trivia questions right. It was awesome. Everyone got some great prizes. Mm-hmm. Next year, if you're local, sign up for the Mills Chicks Night Out and get some great snacks and some prizes to go home with, and come see us. And we met some really nice people. Chelsea Adams came out to meet us last night. That was very nice of her.
Yes, it was wonderful to meet Chelsea.
It was good. It was a good night.
It was good. I'm looking out the window right now, and the leaves are starting to open on the trees. And I'm like, how did this happen? It was just winter.
I'm just afraid we're going to have a wet, disgusting spring and go right into 100 degrees, and that will be horrible.
Before. It's happened before. I don't know that there's much we can do about it. It has happened before.
We can get our chickens to grow some web feet, maybe. I don't know.
I told you, ducks all around.
Okay, on that note, if you're listening to our show and you're loving it, head on over to Apple Podcast and leave us a written review. We love reading these written reviews. They are amazing. They make our day. They make us smile. It's a free way to help the show grow. While you're there, hit that subscribe button. Do it on Spotify. Leave us a 5-star over there. We love the stuff. It makes our day. And they count those subscriptions.
Who's they?
The counters of the subscriptions.
If you're looking for other ways to help support the podcast, you can tell a few chicken-loving friends about the show. You can share your favorite episodes on social media. You can visit our Etsy shop, mugs, t-shirts, tiny chickens. You can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. And the other thing you can do to help support the show is visit our website and our show notes, use our affiliate links and discount codes, and buy products from our sponsors.
Yay!
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you like subscription boxes?
Does it have anything to do with chickens?
Of course.
Then yeah. Let me take a minute to tell you about the Chicken Love Box. If you love goodies for your chickens and you need to go to chickenlove.com.
I love the Mega Box. Tons of useful products for my flock and a chicken tea for me.
You can't go wrong with a chicken tea. They are so cute and so soft.
In the February box, I absolutely love the spray bottle of Bye Bye Boo Boos and the Rooster Cheese Spreader Knife.
I love the Chicken Lady Era hat and tee. They're great, and you can't go wrong with that Coffee with the Chicken Ladies mug.
Boxes start at $39 a month. They ship immediately after your order, and shipping is always free.
Such a great deal. Don't wait. Get off the nest and click already. Use the code CWTCL50 for 50% off your first box of a 3-month subscription or more. That's chickenlove.com. That's chickenluv.com. Get your subscription today.
The Breed Spotlight is brought to you by Murray McMurray Hatchery, defining quality for generations. For over a century, Murray McMurray Hatchery has remained a trusted family-owned business, working tirelessly to ensure our poultry meet the highest standards.
Whether you are an experienced enthusiast or just embarking on the journey, look to McMurray Hatchery for guaranteed quality, rare and heritage breeds, low minimums, and all the supplies you need to raise your flock.
Request a free catalog today.
Oh, we want to see the chicken and the breed spotlights. Yeah.
Oh, heavens. Yeah. I guess that could have been worse. Yeah, I'll get on with that. Yeah.
Oh, wee. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this week's breed spotlight is...
the Crèvecoeur.
Which is a French chicken, if you didn't know. I love my French accent. It's very good.
I'm glad you love it. That's important, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Crèvecoeur is a very old breed of chicken.
Oh, they're old.
Yeah.
How old?
No one knows exactly how old they are, but you know, local people record them being in France like hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
You didn't get my joke. I was like, how old?
How old are they? Older than your mama.
Yeah, there you go. That's
Crèvecoeurs were named for the village of Crèvecoeur, which translates to broken heart.
Shot through the heart. Yeah.
Well, they're to blame. Back in Bon Jovi in New Jersey. The village of Crèvecoeur is in Normandy, France. The Crèvecoeurs are very dramatic looking birds. They're similar in a lot of ways to their cousins, the Polish and the Houdans.
Houdans. Yeah.
They're usually solid black. They have a big crest. They have a beard and a V-cone. Very fancy. Though they're used as dual-purpose birds, historically in France, they're used as dual-purpose birds. And I think here as well. Their docile personalities make them a really great candidate for a chicken lady's flock.
At the poultry show in November, we saw different color varieties of the Crèvecoeur.
And we'll get into that more later, but anytime you have a black chicken, you almost always have the possibility for black, white, blue, and splash.
Exactly. It was kind of, were cool looking.
Yeah, I liked them too. The Crèvecoeur was included in the first printing of the American Poultry Association Standard of Perfection in 1874. For many years, the Crèvecoeurs were critically endangered, but decades of work by breeders has actually moved them into the watch category of the Livestock Conservancy's conservation priority list.
Now, Jeanette Barringer of the Livestock Conservancy did a lot of work with the Crèvecoeur chicken, and she should be commended because she's done lots and lots of work with this breed to get them back from almost near extinction.
Yeah, she's one of a handful of breeders who really worked hard on this bird. Now, as we said before, Crèvecoeurs come from the Normandy region of France. The village sits in the department of Calvados. And you may recognize the name Calvados. because of the famous apple brandy that is distilled there.
I really like an apple brandy. It's good.
Yeah, you know, it's good. It is, yeah. Chickens and apple brandy. What more can you want?
It's perfect, man. Right about now, I could take an apple brandy and a chicken on my lap. Sweet. That would be great.
That's for sure. Some of the poultry historians will suggest that the crèvecoeurs were developed in the 1800s, but the locals will tell you that crèvecoeur chickens have been around for, again, many hundreds of years. They were very popular in their native France. I mean, they were one of a handful of birds that were both fancy and utilitarian, like the Houdan, the Salmon Feverels.
They share like extra stuff about them, you know, like they that do. V comb is so cool. When I look at the Houdans and see the little V comb, it makes me smile. It's different. The crèvecoeur has that. They have the crest. They have a lot of the good different qualities that you want to find in a chicken lady breed, you know, one that's friendly, but looks a little different, a little fancier. And when I hear crèvecoeur, to me, a little fancier comes to mind.
When I hear crèvecoeur, I think very dark and gothic. Like, if you were a witchy chicken keeper, you would have a flock of crèvecoeurs.
I think they should all wear little berets. That's what I just think.
But then you would have to cover that glorious crest that they have.
It sits on top, like on the side. When we were in middle school, I had a cream beret, and I wore that thing all the time, and it went to the side. Remember when berets were in style?
No.
Yes, we were in middle school.
Okay, I'm going to take your word for it, but I don't remember.
You saw me every day with a cream beret that went to the side. Oh, yeah.
No, I have zero memory of it. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just don't remember it. Crèvecoeurs first showed up in the U.S. in the 1850s and 1860s. Lewis Wright and his contemporaries all mention the crèvecoeur's reputation for being fragile health-wise. It's kind of a theme that you see over and over. They're delicate, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's any different than any of the other birds of that group.
A fancy breed.
Yeah. Wright does say that the robustness of the breed was improving towards the end of the 1800s. He also thinks that at one point, Cochins were bred into the English strain because the crèvecoeurs in the UK were starting to show a lot more fluff than was normal.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see any of this mentioned in the US, so maybe it was just a group of British breeders that was experimenting a bit. They never became as popular in the US and UK as they were in their native France. I guess that's no surprise.
Yeah. Geographically, they're there.
Right.
And it's all about that accessibility. You know, you can get to them. They're popular there. With shipping them some places or other, and then you're dealing with breeding programs. So yeah, it makes sense that they're more popular there.
There were enough of them around, however, that they were AP accepted. And again, they were in the first printing of the Standard of Perfection. I also, you know how I love me some old poultry journals. So I looked through the old poultry journals and I found several mentions of crèves for sale in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
What were they selling for? Did you see?
No, they'd always have prices listed. Usually they talk about the bloodline. That was the big thing. Like,
yeah,
I'm just making this up, but like black crèvecoeurs, Mrs. Johnson's line.
Mrs. Johnson.
Mrs. Johnson's line.
How about Mrs. Robinson? Does she have her crèvecoeurs too? Go visit Mrs. Robinson for her crèvecoeurs.
Gotta cue that music.
Okay, so let's look at the body shape of the crèvecoeur. They're large birds, but they're not massive, right?
No, not at all.
The roosters are coming in at about 8 pounds, and the hens are about 6 to 6.5 pounds. It's about an average. You know, like, it's a good-sized bird, over the top, not too small.
Like, when I think of just a healthy standard-sized chicken, it's usually right in that weight range. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I think. And the black is, like you would think, the most common color, and it's the APA-accepted color. But like I was saying earlier, when we went to the poultry show, you're now seeing them come in white, black, splash, because you can get that color variety from breeding different colors together.
It was blues. People had blue crèves at the Ohio Nationals, right?
Yeah, I thought I saw some other ones too, but maybe not. I don't know.
I remember the blue because I like blue chickens.
I thought I saw a splash, but maybe not. It might have.
I know we saw about 10,000 splash Americanas.
Oh, yeah. They were really beautiful.
They were super cute.
Now, they're broad-breasted, right? And the rest of their body, it's pretty well balanced around that big broad breast. Their wattles and red earlobes are small and almost completely concealed by the feathers, that they share the same skull type and wide nostrils as the Polish family. So they really are like close cousins to my Houdans.
Very much so. Yeah,
but they're bigger because the Houdans are smaller chickens.
Yeah, right.
So the Crepe Corps is a bigger scale than, you know, the Polish, than the Houdan family that way.
Yeah.
Their beards and crests are pretty big. And with the hens having more rounded bonnet shaped kind of thing with their hair.
Yeah, the boy's hair is always a bit shaggier. And the
Kind
of a pretty little do on there.
It's the same way with the Houdans and the Polish. The boys have like the shag, and the girls have what they look like they put their head in one of those dryers in the beauty salon and just came out like the way it was.
1960s feathers.
Oh, yes. Now, their legs and feet are dark and leaded blue. Pretty.
Yeah, it's a dark shade of blue. They're very pretty. I was taking another look at them with fresh eyes, and I do quite like a lot of things about them. One of the biggest things I like about them is their personality.
Oh, yeah. They're known to be really friendly. So let's talk about laying stats. The Crepe Corps are good layers. They're going to give you about 150 large white eggs per year. They're in that family of the white egg. And they're known to continue laying into their senior years, which is great.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty nice.
Now, they will sometimes have the urgency to go broody occasionally, and they will raise you up a clutch of chicks. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw no one said that they go broody all the time, but I saw people saying occasionally you'll have a hen who wants to sit on a nest or give her some eggs or whatever. Yeah.
So it's a little known chicken that can make a really, really good pet. I mean,
they're gentle and sweet. They're this nice combination. They're gentle and sweet, but still active. They like to be digging and scratching and doing things. So they're not like couch potato, but they are very friendly. If you handle them often, it keeps them very tame. They're the kind of chickens who will run right to you.
We were talking about this last night at the Chicks Night Out, and Twain would put up like leghorns, and we would say, they're not a beginner chicken. They're not. They're not like a first round chicken. But if you have them, handle them a lot.
Yes. Yes.
And just with any chicken, with constant handling and them getting to know you, you can make them any kind of way you want to make them almost.
You can. I mean, there's something to be said for individual personalities. You might get one who just never likes to be a lap chicken, and that's okay.
Yeah.
They'll probably still be quite friendly and will tolerate you handling them, and that's what you need, right?
Right. Now, they do pretty well in the heat and the cold, so that's a good thing for them.
But it's always that big but.
But
you must protect their crest and beards from getting caked with ice and snow. They're also extremely unhappy when they get soaked by rain and they're stuck in mud and muck. This is a bird that doesn't do well in a muddy, mucky environment.
So they would not do well in Maryland today or the last few days.
Maybe hanging out in the bedroom. Mom, I'm sleeping on the bed tonight.
That's why mine are dry in the coops today. I did not have the heart to put them back out in the rain and mud.
I let mine help, but most of them went back in the coops or went under the coops where they could. So
another thing about any bird with a crest, you do have to trim up the crest sometimes. It's about that time I have to, in the next week or so, trim my crest on my Houdans, just around the eyes to try to make them so that they're not going to go feather blind, so that they can see around them, those types of things, because they're fancy birds.
Here's one of the downfalls of this breed. They are not a great candidate for unsupervised free ranging. They can't see above themselves very well, so they're easy targets for aerial predators. Actually, any predator, because they have a bit of a limited range of vision. That's one of the reasons to keep them trimmed.
Oh, yeah.
But they're also, like, I get this feeling from a lot of the breeds that are just gentle and sweet that have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. They've just been with people so much that they don't have this really sharp
savviness for predators. They don't.
Yeah, exactly right.
They want to be a lap chicken, and lap chickens are great. And this is a fancy lap chicken. So, hey, this might be a good addition to someone's flock.
And I mean, it's really hard for me to find early information on this chicken in France, just like mentions of locals that, you know, there are flocks that have been passed down through the generations. Jeanette Berenger has said this was a chicken usually kept by middle to upper class people, which makes sense because they would have had the faculties to take a little more care of a high maintenance chicken. If you're someone who's like dirt farming every day, you don't have time for that. You need a chicken that can free range and keep themselves safe.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm saying that in the present tense, but I'm talking about hundreds of years ago.
Right. Yeah. So it's a good chicken for now. If you're a fancy chicken lady and you want the fancier chickens and you have time to take care of the extra grooming things, this is a really good chicken. A really, really good chicken. Now,
well, they can still make a nice homestead breed, but they're not the type of chicken where you can just open the door and expect them to take care of themselves. That is not, the crab corps are not that way.
No, they need some help. They're like, hey, will you trim this for me and that for me? The other day, it was crazy. I noticed
that salon days.
Yeah. The other day was crazy. I noticed that Gigi had her beak was a tiny bit too long. And I'm like, okay, time to trim that a little bit. So you have to watch them and see what you have to do grooming wise.
What did you use for the trim?
I just use a dog trimmer just at the end. Yeah. And then I filed it afterwards to make it smooth for her.
Did you use a guillotine clipper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if you have the crab corps, send us some pictures. We would love to see them. If not, and you're interested, the crab corps is a lot easier to get now. Where can everybody go to get the crab corps?
McMurray Hatchery has a really beautiful line of crab corps. This is not a bird that you're going to find in your local feed store unless you are really, really lucky. This is a bird where you're going to have to order it, preferably from a reputable hatchery. Or you could try the Livestock Conservancy's conservation list, see if anyone listed there is selling crab corps breeding stock.
Yeah, so go to McMurray. You can't go wrong with McMurray. And order your crab corps if you're interested.
Is this a bird you could see on your flock?
I probably could, yeah.
Me too, actually. After doing the spotlight, I was like, there's a lot about this bird I like.
I mean, they would match very well with the Houdans and my Polish coming, you know? So that kind of flock would go well together.
And I do like a black chicken.
Oh, yeah.
If you're looking for a chicken coop that's produced in a planet-friendly, sustainable way, try Nestera.
Each coop is made from highly durable, 100% recycled plastic that keeps the equivalent of up to 2,000 shampoo bottles out of a landfill.
Their clean, modern design will fit into any garden or run area and comes with an industry-beating 25-year warranty and a range of handy accessories.
Simple to put together, so quick and easy to clean, and most importantly, red mite resistant. Your chickens will love it.
Quick shipping from Nestera.us.
For a 5% discount, use the affiliate link in our show notes, on our website, and on Instagram. Link in bio. Check them out today. Roosties proudly sponsors Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. They're back with an innovative new product. You're going to want to check this out.
It's an extra large set, a 14-pound feeder and 3-gallon water with steep anti-roost lids. They're made of super durable material. You can either stand them on legs or hang them on brackets on your coop or fence. They're easy to remove and clean, too. Plus, they look awesome.
We personally use Roosties, and we're huge fans. So if you're raising chicks or keeping chickens, check out the Roostie store on Amazon or follow the link in our show notes.
UK chicken lovers, this one's for you. Get happy, healthy hens with EcoNourish's live calci worms. Enrichment, nutrition, and protection in one tasty, sustainable pack. Scientifically proven to support glossy feathers, strong laying and skeletal health,
protect from disease, and improve gut health and immunity. You'll also bust flock stress by stimulating natural instincts and get eco bragging rights. Visit econourish.co.uk and use the code COFFEE15 for 15% off your first order. Your chickens and the planet will hug you for it.
Okay, so are we ready to move on to main topic?
Yeah.
Okay, everybody. So I'm bringing in the guest this week, and we are so happy to have Brittany Poisson in to talk about building coops. She's an amazing lady. She's a home interior designer, and she's a designer of chicken coops. She's pretty big over on the Instagram page. She has a large following, and she got me because her brooder, oh my goodness, it's to die for. Brittany, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. We love your Bee Home Living account. You got gorgeous chickens. You got gorgeous coops and runs. It is so much fun following you.
Thank you.
Okay, Brittany. So our first question is, we want to know a little bit about your background, about the Bee Home Living and the design, and how you got into all of this.
Yeah. So I am an interior designer. I have been for, 13 years. And I decided to get chickens sort of during the COVID chicken rush, like everybody else, I feel like. So I decided to get my chickens. I bought sort of a disastrous coop online and then very quickly realized that that just wasn't going to cut it. So I looked and looked at other coops. I didn't find anything that was like appealing to me. I wanted something that looked really cool in the backyard, something that people were like, wow, did you build that? So I did. So I built my first coop and then the internet really liked the coop. So then chicken math got me. I built another coop and then I started selling my plans because at first I was actually giving them away. I was giving away the plans to my first run that I built. And my husband was like, what are you doing? And I was like, okay, I guess people really do like this. So I put together formal plans now for all of my builds and people seem to really like them. And I love seeing the things that I've built in other people's yards. Like, I just think it's such a cool thing to see my coop in different colors, in a different backdrop. It's just a really neat thing.
So are you getting pictures of people sending you the after they used your plans and how it's turned out?
Yeah, I get tons of pictures. Every once in a while, I'll follow someone and I won't remember that they purchased my coop plans or they won't mention to me that they do. And I'll see their stories and I'm like, hey, that looks really familiar. And I'll see my coop in their backyard. And it's really, it's just kind of a surreal thing because I primarily design kitchens and bathrooms in people's actual houses. So then to fall into this chicken coop world sort of face first, it's just been, it's been really cool. It's been a really cool turn of sort of my career. And I've, of course, I'm still designing for houses, but this is just sort of another avenue that my business has taken me down. And it's been really fun. It's a really good creative outlet for me.
That's fantastic. And it's very much needed. I've looked at a lot of chicken coop plans over the 20 years that I've had chickens and I struggle with them. If they're too technical, or if they're worded in a really technical way, I really struggle with them. And it's really important, I think, to make coop building accessible.
Yeah.
To a lot of us who just are, you know, we don't know tons about buildings, but we can follow instructions if they're written clearly. So I feel like I'm filling this very needed void in the chicken world.
The other thing is, tell us a little bit about the structure that you're designing. What does it kind of look like? Walk us through, because we're all listening here. So kind of give us a visual.
So generally speaking, from the, I guess, design process to having the coop built, generally what I'll do is kind of go, okay, how many chickens do I want this to accommodate? And I sort of build the coop around the roosts and the nesting boxes, because those are the two most important things I feel in a coop to make sure that your birds are as comfortable as possible. And then I just kind of put all the rest of it around it. And then the pretty things sort of come in last. But then the process of building, you know, I do a lot of math. Don't like math, but I do the math because I have to do the math. So I do all the math, figure out exactly what I'm going to need for my materials, create myself a material list, which I then use when I put my plans together, and I modify it as I go. So if I realize, oh, I needed an extra 2x4, then I modify that to make sure that I'm reflecting that in the material list. But when it comes to actually building, there's very little that I don't do myself. Every once in a while, my husband will help me with cutting like metal, because I'm not a big fan of cutting metal. But for the most part, everything is done by me. And I sometimes do the fly by the seat of my pants as I'm building, and I might make a decision to change something or modify it as I go based on what it looks like in real life, kind of going, okay, well, that was better on paper than what it actually is in real life. But yeah.
So right now, how many chickens are in the coop that you have built?
So my current coop, I have 10 chickens in it right now, but I do have chicks inside the house that are going to be moving out there in the spring, late spring.
Nice.
Yeah.
How did you get into chickens? You said you were a COVID chicken mama.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you pull the trigger on the chickens? And what does your flock look like? Tell us some of your breeds and what you have happening over there.
Yeah. So we have good friends who have a large farm. And every time we visit, it was like, you guys need to get chickens. You guys should get chickens. Why don't you guys get chickens? Because I love animals. And so does my daughter and my husband. So finally, I told my husband, I'm like, let's just do it. Let's just get the chickens. And so we did. But I think the main driving force for me was having the ability to have sort of a little bit more control over the food that I'm bringing into the house. So that was why we sort of started the garden and got the chickens and did all that sort of at the same time. And then we started with four. They were the golden girls, but because we got them sort of straight run, they mostly turned out to be golden boys. So we ended up with three roosters and one hen.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So we kept the rooster for a while, and then he started getting a little too roostery. So we brought him back to the big farm where he fit in much better than here. Just better off in a place where there was only adults, I guess. But we still have Dorothy. That's the only one from our original four. She is an Australorp. She's very pretty. She's got a mean face on her, but she's a very good chicken. She's sweet. And then they're all different. The only breed, I have the 10 that are outside. The only breed that I sort of have doubled up on is the Silkies. And that was because it was like power in numbers and bringing in bantams into the flock. I just wanted to make sure that no matter what the dynamic, I felt would be better to not just have one bantam. So I brought in the two, and they were raised actually with my Easter egger. So when I introduced the three, it wasn't just the two tiny chickens being introduced to a large sized flock. So they integrated really well. Everybody gets along. It was a long integration process, but worth it because, like I said, everybody gets along really well.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be adding this year, I've got a Sapphire Jewel. So she'll be added in an olive egger, a Swedish flower hen. I cannot wait to see her feathers.
Oh. That's what Holly Ann has. She has Swedish flowers.
They were some of my earliest chickens. I love Swedish flowers.
She's already absolutely beautiful, but they're 5 weeks old now. So they're still coming into their feathers. And then I have a blue copper Moran. And then I just ordered two more. I just ordered a Wheaton olive egger, and what else did I just order? Another Moran. I don't remember what breed, but another Moran. So we're going for the rainbow over here. The rainbow.
Very nice. I mean, Australorps are one of the nicest breeds out there. I mean, they're good layers. They're beautiful. They're like triple threat. Great personality. The Swedish flower, they're good chickens. And they are the best, like they're the best foragers I've ever seen. I mean, Swedish flower hens, when they were younger, would just go flying by, leap into midair, and just catch bugs that you couldn't even see. I mean, they were amazing.
Oh, that's impressive.
I enjoy having her.
Yeah, that's impressive.
So let's look into inspiration. What inspired you at this point? You get the chickens and you order the coop, and a coop gets there. Was that kind of the inspiration? Like, I can do better than this. You know, I can do this.
I think so. I think it was kind of a few things. So I am a DIYer as well for my home. I hadn't really ever taken on a build project before, but I was like, you know what? How hard could it be? That was my mentality, was like, if I can order this coop online and it is horrible, I have to be able to do better than that. Like, that was pretty much my mentality. It was like, there's no way I can't do better than that. So based on my knowledge of home construction, I sort of took that and said, okay, I can figure out how to get the framing. I can figure out what materials I need for siding. I can figure out what size I need for windows. I was like, there's nothing here I can't figure out. And I was just determined to do it. I was just determined to build it myself and to not have help from my husband. He helped show me a few tools that I wasn't as familiar with at that point, just so that I would be comfortable doing certain things on my own, because I feel like the reason why so many women, I feel, don't build these things is because it's a little intimidating. I mean, the tools themselves aren't overly difficult to use. It's just being comfortable with them. So, you know, once I got comfortable with them, I was like, I can do this. And then my current coop, when I built that, it was sort of the same thing. I was like, I can build a big coop. I can do that. You know, it's going to take some time and a lot of hours, but I can do it. So I did it.
You know what? Maybe the goal of this interview, and maybe we want to inspire at least one woman out there to come to you for the plans and build the coop and show us back that women can do this. We can build whatever we want, right? We can do whatever we want. And to inspire someone to do it, like you were inspired, you got this coop that you ordered online. You're like, what are you kidding me here? I can outdo this a million times over, right? So way to go. That's amazing. And I love the fact that you're making these plans so that other women can feel great and be inspired to go do this also on their own.
Yeah. And I mean, nothing against men, nothing against men, but my coop plans, they don't mansplain anything. So everything is done. Essentially, everything that's written there, all the notes are sort of in my voice, if that makes sense. Yes. So everything that I've written is as if I'm telling you, hey, try it this way. I'm also not afraid to show that I messed something up. And so some of the notes that are on there are like, don't do what I did, do it this way instead. Or, you know, hey, I did it this way, it didn't work out. So then this is how I did it that was successful. Because I feel like sometimes too, it's when someone's building something and it's like that embarrassing, like, oops, I messed up 3 steps ago and now I have to go back and fix it. And like, I do that too. I'll look at something for my coop I built this past spring, my current coop, when I did all the framing, I just sort of matched the two walls. And I was like, where are my nesting boxes going to go? Because I never framed for the nesting boxes. Yeah. So I had to go back and change the framing once I had it all built. So actually, if you look back and look at some of the time lapses, you'll see the framing change from one time lapse video to the next. I don't show that I fixed it because...
Hey, but we're all human. We're all human and we're not robots. We all make mistakes and it makes us who we are. And to show that you can make a mistake and change it and be able to fix it to show to make it what you want is pretty amazing. Now, I kind of want to switch here a little bit from the coop to the brooder because the brooder is really what drew me in. And I love the fact that you made it. And it's of wood and it's amazing. And you can fold it and store it because you don't always need the brooder, right?
Right.
So we're going to have pictures up on our socials so that everybody can see these that day. And we'll have it either on our stories and you can go in and check them out because your brooder is amazing. I love it.
Thank you.
You need to come here and build one with me. Right. Come to Maryland, right? We can do a video together and we can build it out on our property here. And I would love it.
It was really cool. It was one of those things that I looked at and I'm like, I am so sick of putting my baby chicks in a plastic jumbo Tupperware bin, because that's what I think so many of us do. It's that or like the stock tanks. And I was like, I feel like I can just do better than that. And then I'm like, okay, so if I buy a stock tank, now I have to store a stock tank.
Right.
Now I have to put that somewhere. So I was like, you know what? What if I can build this in a way that I can take it apart? So I racked my brain for a good while of how I can build this and how it will come apart. So, you know, I built it in such a way the legs can screw off and all the walls come off. I used like buckles. They almost kind of buckle together and then the lids just go on. So everything stores flat, which to me was like, and not only that, but it can be used as a chick hospital or a chicken hospital, and it has a divider down the middle. So even if you had an incident where you had two chickens that needed to be in it at the same time, each side is large enough that it can fit a full size hen. So
it's kind of like a wood pop up, to be honest with you. Yeah. And everyone who listens to us knows we are the queen of the pop up. We believe in the pop up because it folds flat. You can put it in your garage, in your basement if you have a sick chicken, or even for a brooder, it's something that you can buy to give your chicks more space as they get older. And it reminded me of the premise of that, but with wood and even more sturdy and the fact that you could store it. So I love it. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's pretty big too. It's pretty big. So even right now I've got 10 5-week-old chicks in there. So I will be separating them just because actually I've got 6 Brahmas and then I have the 4 chicks that I'm keeping. And my chicks, I don't know what it is about the Brahmas, but they're picking on the Brahmas. So I'm going to be moving the Brahmas down to the coop that didn't quite work out outside. It's now a garage coop and it's great for grow outs. Definitely not great if it has to withstand any sort of weather at all.
Especially in New Hampshire, you have cold winters.
We have cold spring, cold fall, cold winter. So it's just, I mean, we have warm weather for maybe 4 or 5 months and then the rest we could have freezing temps. So it's important that it be built well to keep them warm.
Yeah. The problem with the Brahmas is that Brahmas are the sweetest chickens out there and they're always at the bottom of the pecking order.
Yep.
So So that's,
It's already started with them. So I feel so bad because mine keep pecking at their feathers as they're growing in. Hopefully, I mean, I check on them several times a day, so it didn't go long without me noticing. But I even kind of separated them and then I was like, okay, I'll wait a week and then put them all back together. Nope. It didn't work. No. So they'll just be separated until they go to their forever homes.
Right.
But yeah, so I will be separating them, but still having the divider in that brooder has been, I mean, a lifesaver, because otherwise I would have had to put somebody in the plastic tub, you know, without that divider, because I would have had to separate them still. So
it's a great idea and it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to tell this tiny little story here and you can laugh at me, feel free. She knows it'll be ridiculous. When I built the coop that I built, I was terrified of using any power tools other than a drill.
Okay.
So I had my then boyfriend, now husband's power drill. And I was determined to build this coop, but I was really afraid to use any kind of power saw. So I went and bought myself, I kid you not, I went and bought myself a set of Japanese hand saws.
I knew it was going to make me laugh because I've heard this one before.
And I hand sawed every single piece of wood that went on that coop.
Oh, and my goodness.
As ridiculous as it is, and it took me it did take me several weeks to build it.
I can feel the blisters now.
You know, actually, it wasn't as painful as I thought because the Japanese saws, they cut both ways.
That's what she said.
They cut both ways, so they're more efficient at sawing. But I guess I'm telling this story, one, because if you really want to do something, you find a way to do it.
Absolutely. You don't have to do it the traditional way.
Right. And two, if you're a woman out there who really wants to build, but you're terrified of using power, and I use a power saw now. I'm over it. My husband will want to move it. But
that's why she only has six fingers, but pay no attention to that. I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
But as ridiculous as it is, you know, if you really, really want to try to build something and you're willing to put extra time in it, you can try something like that. There are workarounds.
Well, here's the thing. What Brittany's doing is giving that inspiration and giving that little nudge to people by saying, here are the plans that you can kind of, you have something to go along with so that you have a little something to follow, right? And it's okay if you make a mistake, keep going if you need help. I love what you're doing for women 100%, you know, because women need to know and not be afraid to go out there and build themselves a chicken coop.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, writing it, you and I were talking a little bit before the interview started. We were talking about, darn it, my mind just went blank. What was I about to say?
Old. You're old.
I am old. Okay.
We were talking about geese.
Ever talks about.
It's not true.
I talk about sheep. Stop talking about. See, Brittany even knows. Everybody knows that's all you talk about is geese.
We were talking about. Well, we were talking about modifying.
Ryan Gosling.
No, I'm not naming any of my geese Ryan Gosling.
Come on. He's hot.
It was me talking about that I find a lot of plants just too technical for my brain.
Right. It's
written in a way that I can't digest the information. And I think writing in your own voice the way you have is going to be crucial, because if you can, it's not like any of us are particularly stupid people. It's just that sometimes things are phrased in a way that your brain doesn't process very well. So having things written in your voice, I think, is like a game changer.
Like going to IKEA. I can never put anything from IKEA together. Like there's no way.
I don't think anyone can.
I mean, and I'm somewhat like, I look at things. I use pictures too. Like my brain works that way. And then if it's said in a way that someone's speaking, that makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think the whole point of this is that you can inspire people to do the things. And to do the things makes you feel even more empowered as a person, as a woman.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's definitely tools that I recommend starting with if you're someone who's a little bit tool shy.
That would be me.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, I built my first coop because the first saw I ever learned to use was a chop saw, because it's quite literally just up and down. It's a very easy movement and it's way less intimidating, I feel, than a saw that you have complete control over, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So that was the first saw that I ever used. And then I realized very quickly, like, I can't build an entire chicken coop with a chop saw. Like, I'm going to have to cut siding and like, I'm going to have to branch out here. my husband and I don't work well together like we do in our marriage. But when it comes to projects, we don't think the same way. So because of that, I don't like to ask him like, hey, how do I use this tool? Because I'm going to get some like ridiculous explanation that makes no sense to me and is not helpful. So I used YouTube. I looked up this exact tool that I have. I looked up, you know, the exact brand, the exact model, and I just watched someone do like a walkthrough tutorial of how to use it, which things do what, how to make the adjustments on it. And I taught myself how to use a circular saw. So I built my red coupe, the first coupe I built, just purely with the circular saw and the chop saw. I did everything. And then with my current coupe, I had to use a jigsaw, and I'm laughing because the jigsaw that I have since bought a new one. Actually, I got it for Christmas from my husband, which is so funny. It's like a role reversal thing. I'm the one getting tools for Christmas. But I had to use the jigsaw that we had, which is from my husband's Pepe, who passed away, gosh, 20 years ago. So it's 20 years plus however long he owned it old. This thing is old.
That you were working with a vintage saw.
We still have it. It's downstairs. I don't know that I'll ever use it again. Like, rest in peace. But it did the trick. And now that I have my saw, I'm like, man, I would have been way less afraid of this thing had I just had the one that I have now from the beginning, because it's a much smoother cut, but neither here nor there. But, you know, so it's like, I feel like every build I do, I challenge myself to learn a new tool, which has been really great. I still am very leery of the table saw. I don't know what it is about the table saw, but that is one I'm not a big fan. So my husband will help me if I have to do table saw cuts.
My husband has a table saw. Yeah. My husband, Joe, has a table saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks so intimidating.
I'm like, no, I think it's my hand off.
Right. Well, anytime I need the table saw, it's because I have to cut something big.
Yeah.
So I need to do a large straight cut. So I'm like, I don't want to have this cumbersome large piece of material, because that is probably, for me, the most difficult thing as a woman building, is that sheets of plywood, they're heavy. Yes, and I'm not saying that I can't lift it. I'm not saying that I can't do it. I'm just saying it's not the easiest thing in the world to be 5'4" lugging a sheet of plywood halfway across the backyard. It's not the easiest thing in the world. So
it's true. When I get frustrated,
there's definitely a curve there.
Yeah, there is definitely a curve. When I get frustrated at something, my husband will remind me, your arms aren't that long.
Mm-hmm.
This is not because you're a woman. This is not
right.
Because you're not physically inferior. You simply were born and your arms are not that long. You just, you don't have the reach. So,
right. My problem is I don't have very long legs. So like if I have a sheet of plywood and it's like up under my armpit or, you know, whatever, I'm holding onto this board, it hits the ground because I don't have, there's not a lot of distance between my arm and the ground. So that's usually the issue for me.
The three of us are short. You're 5'4", mm-hmm. I'm 5'4", and Chrissy's 5'1".
Yeah.
I'm the shortest.
You're the shortest.
And I got short arms too. So it's like, it's like we're built differently.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go into what does the future look like for you? Are you designing bunches of coupes and brooders? And what do you see?
I think my goal moving forward, I think, is to build at least one coupe a year so that I can have just a variety of different plans available, because everybody's needs are different for their flocks. Some people have bantam flocks. Some people have mixed flocks where they have different types of birds and they might want a coop that can house ducks on the bottom and chickens up top. Like, there's just all different types of needs. So that's sort of a goal, is to continue building coops, even if they're not for myself, continue building them. I do have something coming up. It's still a little bit of a secret. I know, secrets, everybody perks up.
Ooh, spill the tea, Brittany.
Right?
Come on, spill the tea.
It's a little bit of a secret. It's someone that probably everybody will know in the chicken community that I am working with for their next coop. So we've been working, we've already put the design together, and that will be coming up. There's a little hint. She has already talked a bit on her page about adding another flock. So that's the only hint I'm giving you, but we have a fun project coming up. So definitely over the next, I would think probably month or so, you'll start seeing some stuff on my page and on her page, and you'll see it and you'll go, oh, that's what she was talking about.
I do know someone who's doing a new flock. I don't know if it'd be her though.
She's not, Brittany's not going to tell us even if we guess right now.
I know.
So don't even worry about it, man.
It's not really like the secret of all secrets, but we just haven't made it public yet that we're working together on this project. So, but it is going to be a fun one. So
it's us. You're coming over. You're building me the brooder.
No, she's building me the goose coop.
Right. I've got a laundry. I've got a list here. Right. You're giving me a honey-do list.
I might pick.
Come on, honey. Come on over and help me do this.
But aside from that project, we have a couple things coming up, like in the more slightly more distant future. We're looking at buying some land. And when that happens, I'm not going to be taking my coop with me. So I will be building another coop on our property when we move. And I'm actually toying with some ideas, trying to make, I don't know, just make it a little extra just to be extra, because the internet, it's like they love it and they hate it. So sometimes I'm like, people are like, that's so excessive. And then other people are like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. But either way, people are seeing it. So
you can't please everybody. So you may as well please yourself and your chickens.
Absolutely.
Number one rule.
I like to have wallpaper in my coop, and I like to have, you know, really fun light fixtures on the outside. I like to have the landscaping done. I like to have it look like that because it's in my backyard and people are going to see it. My neighbors are going to see it. So it doesn't need to be this thrown together palette thing. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's just not what I wanted to do. So
here we go. There's nothing wrong at all with being a bougie chicken lady.
Absolutely.
Single thing wrong with it. Just like there's nothing wrong with being someone who doesn't like bougie stuff. But if you like the bougie stuff, and I just like to say bougie a lot, do it. Do it, because if it makes you happy, that's all that matters.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there's ways to build a really nice coop on a budget. If you know somebody who might have wood left over from a project that they've done, if you've got wood left over from your own project or different materials that you're able to go, okay, how do I work this into my coop build given the size pieces I have left? You know, you can absolutely do that and there's nothing wrong with it. But there's definitely something to be said though about, you know, having everything be new wood and knowing that the pallets, because with pallets, they can have chemicals on them. They can have all kinds of nails and staples, and you have to be really diligent about what you're using. So that would be my only, I guess, caution there is like, there's nothing wrong with using pallet wood. Just be mindful that it could have all kinds of stuff sticking out of it.
That's a good point. You know, because things like heavy metal poison can happen.
Right.
In my case, I can't use pressure treated lumber because my poultry yards are in my sheep fields and the sheep. Copper is dangerous for sheep. So I think you really do need to think about what you use.
Absolutely.
But if you are using a lot of disparate stuff, I'm assuming that a nice coat of pretty paint and, you know, some bright colors would go a long way towards making it look great.
Definitely.
Exactly.
There's a lot of things that slapping a coat of paint on will do wonders for. And I mean, I buy paint for each of my builds because that's the interior designer piece. I don't want to do like the same color twice. So I do different things with each one. But I mean, you can say if you've got a can of exterior paint in your garage that's just sitting there taking up space, use it. It doesn't have to be anything that you're going out and spending $40 on a gallon of paint. You know, if you've got the materials in your house, if you have things that you can use, then use them. So, you know, I have people often ask me how much I spent on my coop, and I'm like, I'm probably not the one to ask because I don't care what it costs. It's not like I'm rolling in money over here, but I mean, when I built it, I wasn't specifically trying to save money.
Right.
So everything I did was just bought this new, wasn't really looking so much at what it costs. I was just looking at what I wanted. So, you know, there's definitely ways to do it and be a bit more frugal if you want.
And here's the thing. If you spend a little bit more upfront, and you get higher quality stuff, it's going to last you longer in the end.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, look at it that way. You're going to spend it one way or another by either it falling apart sooner by using less expensive stuff or spending a little bit more money and having it last longer. I love what you're doing. And I just, you know, I'm looking at it on your Insta now. I love that sage green that you used. It's really pretty. You do a great job. So Holly Ann's going to take us out with the last question here.
This is the most unfair question of all. We ask this question of all of our guests. You are allowed to have more than one answer because it would be ridiculous if we didn't let you have more than one.
Okay.
What is your favorite breed of chicken?
Oh, gosh. I would say, if we're based on looks, I would say that so far my Swedish flower hen, she's not even grown yet and she's absolutely beautiful. Funny. All my other chickens, I said that, but look-wise, probably her. In terms of temperament, my salmon, she is the sweetest chicken that I have.
Semifederals?
Yes. She is just so sweet. She's my little helper. If ever you see any videos of me cleaning the coop, she is not far behind. Like, she is right there with me. She's just so sweet. And then definitely my Leghorn, she's the boss. And so she's a favorite too for that reason. She's big too. She's huge. She's probably the biggest chicken I have, but
Leghorn. Wow.
Yeah, she's big. I think she's a cross. I think she's kind of like a backyard
mixed with some Leghorn. Yeah.
She pulled out some of our favorites too. So
yeah. Yeah.
We knew you had good taste. We already knew you had good taste, but clearly you have great taste in chickens too.
Yeah. But those are some of my favorites. I mean, I love the Silkies. I will say, if you're looking for chickens that are really good egg producers, they are probably not the ones to go with. I've had one. She just in the last 48 hours snapped out of being broody. One of them, she'd been broody. I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating. Over 4 months, she's been broody.
Have you heard the saying that a Silkie will sit on a rock? The Silkies are known for their broodiness. And as soon as they lay one egg, the egg comes out, they want to sit on it and be broody and they want to hatch that egg.
It's been so
consistent. Yeah.
That's so why much as I love them, and they're easy to pick up if I need to, they don't mind being held. My daughter loves them. She's 4, you know, everybody loves them because obviously they're just like little cotton balls. But if you're looking for layers, good layers, they're probably not the best breed to go with. But in terms of if you've got kids and you're just getting chickens purely for, you know, just to have them as pets or for entertainment, a great breed.
Little experience though. Yeah. Want to have a Silkie, because Silkies have some special needs that you kind of need to take care of.
They do.
So they're a little bit more of a difficult care when it comes to chickens. And, you know, they're great. We call them simply the pet chicken because they're not going to agree. They're going to go broody a lot. That's what they do. And they're not going to lay you a ton of eggs, but they will love you a whole bunch. And
absolutely,
they don't do well with wind and rain and snow and all those things. So, you know, you have to make special provisions for them. But
I'm just thinking about them after they've been in the rain and what it does to the fluff on their heads. They look so funny. But yeah, I mean, they have an extra toe that's usually a little wonky. They've got feathered feet. They also, when I integrated them into the flock, it took them probably 3 months to start going into the coop at night on their own, all the way in. Like they'd roost on the door. So then my auto door, it doesn't like squash them, but it would start to shut. And then I go out there and I've got one of them half stuck in the half in, half out. And I'm like, girls, you're lucky we have a run, because if a fox saw your bum hanging out of there.
My goodness.
Yeah. So they were a little bit of maintenance in the, I guess, training them to do what you want them to do. So I don't know how they're going to do when we move and have to learn a new coop. We'll see. We have to start that process all over again. But
well, we want to thank you for coming on today and spending this hour with us and chatting chickens and coops. And most importantly, being inspired as a woman to go try that power tool and go try to build that coop yourself. Now, my husband's really going to be teasing me on this one because I'm not that person, but to be inspired to try it at least and know that you can do it. And Holly Ann, where can we find Brittany? She's out there on social media. Let us know where.
So Brittany is on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Is everyone find you under Be Home Living?
Yep.
Perfection. Go take a look at these coop plans. We were talking that perhaps the, which coop was it that you said I could modify for geese?
The flock starter would probably flock be starter. The one that I would recommend. Okay. And it would be really easy to modify because of the fact that I use really easy numbers. So everything is by the feet. Like everything's really easy to make larger, make smaller, whatever you need.
And you're coming up to build it with us, right? So yeah.
Absolutely.
It needs to be sky blue with white trim.
Right?
Ooh, you turned into the sky blue forever. You want the sky blue. That's what you want, Holly Ann. I know.
That's funny.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brittany. It was so great to meet you. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks. We just want to thank Brittany one more time for spending a really fantastic hour with us. I have her socials linked in the show notes. Go check her out. Thanks again, Brittany.
Thanks again. Okay. Let's move on to
cracking the eggs.
Cracking those eggs. Now, we're doing something for spring or, you know, just something different. We're doing new potato and egg salad on greens. You want to know how to use your eggs and do something different? This is it. And it's easy.
It's easy and it's good. New potatoes is a term that's kind of used now as a catch-all for small waxy potatoes.
They're my favorites.
But they're good. But it also means potatoes that were freshly dug from the potato patch before they put any size on.
Right.
It's new potatoes. Either way, they are an excellent match with hard-boiled eggs of any kind. So that would be chicken eggs, duck eggs, or goose eggs.
So let's go through the ingredients of what we're going to need for this recipe. We need 1 pound of small new waxy potatoes, 6 large eggs, hard-boiled and peeled. And you're not going to have a problem getting those 6 right now, that's for sure.
No.
1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 1/4 teaspoon of celery salt, sea salt and or fresh pepper, 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh chives or dill, 1/8 teaspoon of paprika. And that can be optional, but it's really a good taste. Chopped dill pickle, again, optional, but that's never optional for me.
I know. I love the dill in there.
Oh, yeah.
So your potatoes, you're going to wash them, and depending on their size, you'll cut them in half or quarter them and put them in a saucepan. Add water until they're covered. Boil them over medium heat until they're fork tender. Drain them and set them aside to cool for a bit.
And try not to eat them before you put it all together.
Yeah, if these are the new potatoes, often have thin skin, so I usually don't even bother to peel them.
I never peel them.
You're going to slice or chop your eggs however you like them and add them to a large bowl. Put all the rest of the ingredients in there, every single thing, and then the potatoes. Gently mix it together. You're going to season it to taste with your salt and pepper. I think it looks pretty if you do another sprinkle of paprika on the top of the salad.
Yep.
And then you're just going to serve it over a bed of butter lettuce or baby greens of your choice. It's easy.
Enjoy.
It's delicious. Yeah.
It's a great lunch if you get together with your bestie to talk about chickens. It's something that you can make easily. It doesn't take a long time. And it's a great, just, you could even do it for dinner if you want something quick and you have lots of eggs. Like right now, I've got a hard boil like 3 dozen eggs because I have so many.
So many right now.
So it's a great salad. Try it. You might like it. Let us know what you think. Okay, so let's move on to retail therapy. Retail therapy.
Yeah.
This week's retail therapy, we're talking vintage salt and pepper shakers. And there are so many, I'm talking so many out there that, you know, why not?
Well, we both collect them. They're really easy to display. Both of us have some of them on like our kitchen windowsill.
Yeah, and the thing about them that's good is I have some that I've packed up in little shoe boxes that you can switch them out. And, you know, if you get tired of some, they're like little mini chicken figurines. Now, you're never going to use them for really salt and pepper, but hey, they're fun to collect.
They're super fun. One of the things I like about them is they are one of the chicken collectibles that you can find in thrift shops.
Ooh, there's a jadeite pair on Etsy with the roosters. For $20, $19.99.
Really? Do they use the maker?
It just says jadeite green. Here's the picture of them.
Neat.
Yeah. Oh, wait. You can't see them all. There's a picture of them. They're really cool. I mean,
I've seen those before.
Yeah. There's, if you want a 5-minute break from reality, you can, you know, Google vintage chicken salt and pepper shakers, and there's so many.
5 minutes? What kind of rabbit hole are you going in? I'm down there for like half an hour.
Well, if all you have is 5 minutes, then take advantage of it and look up something that's nice that you can get, you know.
And you can get them. I mean, we're talking vintage, but you can get them I mean, really old ones, you can get contemporary ones. If you're looking to do a collection of chicken salt and pepper shakers on the cheap, you can go pretty much every year. Cracker Barrel has a different set of small.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Chicken salt and pepper shakers are usually about a dollar. The bigger ones are a few dollars. You can do that. You can get what you were alluding to earlier, Chris, is they're figural. A lot of them like
eat totally
the salt pepper. The salt shaker is a rooster and the pepper is a hen. You can also get chickens painted on things like the jade.
Oh, yeah.
The jadeite you were talking about was two jadeite bottles with a rooster painted on the outside.
Exactly. But the figurine ones are fun to collect because they're shaped like chickens.
Yeah.
And, you know you're not going to use them for salt and pepper.
Right.
But, you know, we put them on our windowsill. I put them on the tea cart that's in the dining room. I put them on the dining room table. I switch them up. We have lots in our studio.
We use them as cake toppers.
You can use them for many things. You can, they have holes in them, so you can make a little place setting card to stick in there.
Yeah.
Or your chicken table for a special event. All different things that you can do with them.
And they really do come in all sizes. Like, there's a good size rooster figurine. He's vintage. And if you're lucky, you get the salt and pepper shakers with him. They're shaped like an egg and they sit on either side of him.
Right.
And then I have some salt and pepper shakers from Japan. You know, it's a set, a hen and a rooster that are tiny, tiny.
Some are really small and some are bigger. But, you know, you just have to take a few minutes to Google it and look up all the different types because there's so many of them. Okay. Send us your pictures if you have some. We want to see them. So, on that note, should we tell everybody what we're going to be talking about next week?
Next week, we are spotlighting one of the cutest birds out there, the Japanese bantam.
Yes, we are.
The lovely Fiona makes her triumphant return.
Yay!
We are talking about incubating chicks with Fiona. Cracking the eggs, spaghetti salad.
Ooh, I need some of that in my life.
Looks good. And for retail therapy, we are reviewing Eaton Hemp's new Roost Refresh.
The bag is beautiful, that's for sure.
It is very pretty, yeah.
What should we tell everybody to do until next week?
Hug your chickens.
Every day and kiss them too. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to see more of us, please follow us on Instagram at Coffee with the Chicken Ladies. If you'd like to help us grow the podcast, please leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/coffeewiththechickenladies. Thanks for listening. Ha 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 ha!